P. Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan. My Instagram feed this morning was, I don't know how or why it popped up, but it was Tupac on Saturday Night Live. It was really cool. Right now, excited to get to the BetQL guest line. Talk to Mr. Mike Sando from The Athletic, covering the NFL for 27 years, Hall of Fame voter, all the good stuff. And I would say the originator of the QB tiers kind of system of evaluating quarterbacks. Mike, what up, man? How are you?
It's good to be here. Doing well, thanks.
Appreciate you.
I think you came up with that tier system that you do every year, mm-hmm. kind of looking at quarterbacks around the league. Jaden Daniels is obviously kind of taking the league by storm right now. Caleb Williams is starting to play well. Those two will match up on the field in 2 weeks. But what's your take on Jaden so far? Has he surpassed your expectations?
Oh, he sure has. I mean, for any rookie, how could you know it would be this good, even if it was going to be good? Even if you thought he was going to be good, which a lot of people did, that it would be like this, where you're setting records on offense and, you know, it just gets everyone excited. It's amazing. I mean, it's six straight games pretty much of really good ball, you know. So last year when I did quarterback tiers, you know, and I pulled the 50 coaches and evaluators in the league and you know, really look at how they evaluate the quarterbacks, C.J. Stroud set the record. He broke Justin Herbert's record within tiers, 11 years of doing this, as far as how high somebody has ever debuted in that poll after their rookie year. We don't put the rookies in because you haven't seen them play. So Stroud, I believe, was eighth overall last year, and maybe Justin Herbert, I think, had been 10th when he came in off a good rookie year. So that's the realm we're looking at right now. I mean, I can't imagine that he would be outside the top 10 if he were to continue, you know, to have a good year, stay healthy, that sort of a thing. How could you discount him, what he's doing?
Well, what's been the one thing that's been most, I would say, that has surprised you the most about what he's done as a rookie? Because, you know, we all know guys come in with a lot of talent, and sometimes they seem overwhelmed. To me, he doesn't seem overwhelmed ever.
That's the part of it. Now, I didn't, you know him personally or anything and wasn't following him every week in college or anything like that. But I would say that is a rare trait of just sort of also knowing what to say. Like, I think Patrick Mahomes was great at that coming in, just knowing how to talk about himself, his team. The situations didn't seem too big for him. From a playing standpoint, I think his feel for the game and not taking too many big hits, I thought that was something where you saw highlights in college where he got hit hard. That was a little bit of a worry for me. And like, if you've seen like Anthony Richardson, I've likened it to, like, he doesn't seem to have that feel. Like, he kind of gets T-boned in the intersection, you know, where he's just driving along and then he didn't really roll with it, right? And then there's some guys who are just, yeah, some guys are just really instinctive of how to, you know, I think like Lamar Jackson knows he sometimes even welcomes hits, but he kind of rolls his body, you know, he doesn't usually just get, it's like he's a feel for the game, it's a feel for space, maybe it's a vision, but I think he really has that. That was sort of the one thing that worried me a little bit, and I don't know if he's evolved at all or if those college highlights were just one-off type of plays, but I really haven't seen him just get lit up.
You know, I think when I use this analogy a lot, Mark, where I say in college you're trying your best in 4 years to impress 32 people to probably draft you as high as they can. But then once you get to the next level, I remember getting here in Washington. I would lift weights like a maniac. I got here and Dan Riley said, listen, you no longer are trying to get as strong as you can. You're trying to maintain as long as you can. And I think if you get the right people around you to get you to understand that you no longer are trying to impress us. You already impressed us. Now we need you to be here for 10, 12 years. That if you get guys to change their mind like that, then you can see them make that transition.
Yes. Then the other part of it, I think he's really been a pinpoint passer, too. He's not just okay as a passer. Sometimes, a lot of times, you get guys, if they are really good at running, they don't really have to become as precise with their passing. It takes time. you know, whether that was Josh Allen or, you know, even Lamar to some degree too. So I've been really impressed with some of the just kind of really accurate passes he's made downfield is probably, you know, stands out too.
You know, going forward with Jaden, is there any reason to think I look at all the advanced numbers and then I watch the games, obviously. I don't see any reason to think this young man's not on a path to being a great quarterback. There are good quarterbacks, right? I think he's in that next tier.
I know everything
maybe
not about
yet, but going there.
I know everything about covering the league for 27 years tells me to say, wait a minute, you know, and we probably should wait a minute and just see how it plays out. But
sure.
I'm with you. I mean, I think you, somebody, I did a podcast yesterday and somebody asked me, is it too early to talk about the MVP conversation? Well, we're not going to vote on it now, but how could you, if you talked about it now, how could you not have him high in it, right? I mean, just what he's done has been amazing. So, yeah, I don't see a bunch of flaws or something that's going to make it unravel. I think we wanted to see long-term the Cliff Kingsbury and, you know, offense over time, but I'm not seeing any issues there either. It looks like a great fit.
Has Cliff impressed you with the way he's worked this thing? Because I look at him consistently putting him in a position where they have a defense in a pickle.
I do agree with that. And, you know, I think Cliff was, you know, he had a lot of detractors when he came to Arizona because he got the job so quick. And that really annoys a lot of people who don't get the job so quick. So that worked against him. But also, I think he probably, some of the things we're talking about with Jaden and the maturity and self-awareness and all that, I don't think Kyler Murray was there at that time. So, you know, he could have reached some limits with Kyler, really, as much as he reached some limits with Cliff. And he may not be reaching those limits with Jaden because they may not be there. He may not have limits. He may be able to really show us the best Cliff, too.
Yeah, well, and what's interesting, too, whether... how real it is or the perception of Kyler's kind of dedication to the playbook and film and all that. Like, they did try to put it in his contract, right? Like, there's got to be something there. There are none of those questions with Jaden.
No, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do a note on this on my Monday column. Is like, that's not going to be part of Jaden's contract.
No.
You know what I mean?
They may have to tell him, stop coming so early.
Yeah, we need you to get some sleep.
There's ingredients, though. A lot of these things come together and determine how successful a pairing is going to be. I also bet you that Cliff Kingsbury is better now than he was then.
He said how much he's changed and evolved since then, and I think it'd be hard not to.
Well, but it can be easy not to if you get the next job too fast. I think that sometimes it's good to have time between jobs or big responsibilities. And I'll give you an example. Adam Gase was with the Dolphins, and they didn't have a terrible record, but he got the Jet job right away. Like, it was too soon. And that, plus, that's an impossible job. What if he had 2 years to just kind of like reassess things, right, and just get better? What if Cliff, the minute he got fired by the Arizona, had become coach of the Jets? You think we'd be talking about what a great job Cliff's done?
Yeah,
right?
No, that's a good point.
So where you go, time in between to get better, who you get to work with, what the expectations are, all these things come together.
Oh, the situation matters in all capacities of life. Talking with Mike Sando from The Athletic. You can give him a follow at SandoNFL. Of course, Mike joins us via the BetQL guest line. You can read his stuff in The Athletic, the quarterback tiers, weekly, the pick six column. Let's turn kind of around the league to your column this week. And it seems like you're kind of setting the table for if, how, when Cleveland finally gets out of this Deshaun Watson situation.
Well, I don't know how long they can keep a straight face if they're going to be historically bad and he's not going to look good and just keep going with it. But they obviously feel like it needs to go for a while. My column was, okay, this looks like it could be kind of an untenable situation at the end of the year for everybody. Like, you can't just keep reloading with the same situation. So I looked at, okay, what would your options be at the end of the year? You could, you know, demote him and carry him on your team and keep paying him. You know, he's going to count about $73 million on your cap as a backup. You could do that. You could cut him, which would make that $73 million go up to 100 and some million. And now you're really, you know, making changes to your roster or to accommodate that. Or, you know, maybe a bit of a fantasy, but could you trade him in the way that Houston traded Brock Osweiler when they were done with him? They traded him and a second-round pick to Cleveland. Cleveland never played him, but Cleveland took the second-round pick and paid his salary, right, which I think was $16 million back at the time. So could you find a team that has that needs draft picks, that has a billionaire owner, that has some cap space, and would be willing to acquire Deshaun Watson and then probably cut him? You're not going to stand there at the podium and say, this is our guy and we want to build around him. I think that's too hard to do based on how he's played and all the off-field stuff. But could you, you know, have some sort of a deal that way where you're basically just, you know, moving some money around in the books and getting him out of Cleveland, which I think he would want to at the end of the year. He has a no trade clause, but who's going to want to stay as long as he gets his money? You know, maybe you could find a way to check all those boxes of him getting his money. Cleveland gets out of this and another team gets some draft capital. Could you do that?
Man, no.
It's a mess.
From what standpoint do you say no? So where's the hang up to you?
I don't think he's a player he was.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of his.
He's not the player. That'd be hard as hell for any. He's not a player. I'm saying that even if you acquire him, you're going to cut him. It's just the cap implications of this. It's from a cap standpoint, it's way easier for Cleveland to trade him and have another team pay at least some of the money. That really would help them from a cap.
What do they have to send? Like a pair of firsts or something? What
entices
a
team? Yeah,
right.
If we're going to have that conversation.
It's a salary dump, basically, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It would be a salary dump, so the acquiring team could say, "Look, this guy's owed $92 million. We're not paying $92 million for a second round pick. We'll pay $35 million and give us two twos, right?" And then you go back and forth until that dollar.
That's interesting. Yeah.
That dollar pick thing balances out. And then the new team doesn't want to have a massive PR hit that we're acquiring Deshaun Watson, so they're going to cut him anyway. And then Deshaun gets to be a free agent, which is probably the best scenario for him because he gets paid anyway.
With 100 or 100 plus million, I'll take it.
I think he just retires. Like
I agree. Who's going to bring him in based on his play?
Who's going to bring him in
based on the energy he brings to your team right now? It just seems like it's hard to watch for everybody right now.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike,
what do you think in the locker room? I'm just curious. What do you think in the locker room is like? What are those guys? What's their point, or are they? What do you think?
We talked about that after the Commanders-Browns game, and I've been in enough locker rooms where players clearly know a guy is playing that shouldn't be. It's got to just be super toxic.
It has to be close to that by now, where they are like saying, okay, we whatever happened, but he's not helping us win, so you got to go to somebody else. Because I was telling JP, Mike, before the game, Cleveland and Washington, I watched Jameis Winston warm up, and if you saw him warming up, you would have sworn somebody told him you're going to play the day early. Because I've never seen a backup work that hard in my life in a warm up.
Oh, and he is a joy. I'm not saying he's a consistent performer every week and all that, because he could give you the Andy Dalton effect where he comes in, has a record-setting day, and 3 weeks later is throwing three picks. I'm not saying that, but he would give energy. He's a guy everybody likes, I think. Don't you think? I mean, you can feel good about playing for Jameis. He's tough. He stands in there. He'll make something happen.
The other guy will not. Mike, I'd be crazy if I didn't at least ask you about Dallas and Jerry Jones. I thought Jerry Jones' behavior on the morning show in Dallas was embarrassing. I think that is far more reflective of them giving up 50 on his birthday than it is of the completely fair questions he was asked. How hot is it in Dallas right now?
Well, I thought it was hilarious that his whole problem, his whole beef was the fact that these guys worked for his radio station or whatever, right? It's a flagship station.
Right.
So he did not dispute what they said. He just didn't like who was saying it. So that shows you he's a little sensitive right now, because Jerry loves the spotlight and loves, you know, to stir it up. So it seemed like he was genuinely ticked off there. But, you know, he's a businessman first. I think that's just been proven out. And from a football standpoint, they've had every coach he's hired, except for Dave Campos, had a winning record. So that's a lot better than a lot of owners. I'm not saying that he doesn't care about winning or he doesn't have a good football operation. I think he has generally had a good operation. But it's so always about him that I do think that has to explain why it's been harder for them to get to the next level. I do think it is harder to coach a team and lead a team when the owner is leading all the time, right? And all those players
on the sideline while you're trying to coach late in the game, that sure will mess you up.
Yes. And I've talked to coaches about that who are like, you know, you're going to win when you go to Dallas, but those players know where the buck stops. Remember when it was Romo and Jason Witten? Those guys were like sitting in a suite at concerts and stuff. Like, that just makes it harder to coach the team from a football standpoint. So I think he has enabled them to be pretty good team for a long time, but maybe he's limited them from getting the final step.
Well, you could let him know that JP and I would ask him questions. We're not working for his station.
Yeah, he can come on any time, huh?
Yeah. Mike, the last note in your column, tell B. Mitch is a really, really number one huge Aaron Rodgers fan. Can you just tell him?
No, I'm not.
Can you just tell him the kind of interesting stat similarity with Peyton's first year in Denver?
Well, they both started 2-3, and the Bronco teams trailed, I think, by 20 or more points three times in their 2-3 start. Now, I think Peyton Manning was more productive than Aaron Rodgers has been to this point. And Peyton Manning also has shown an ability to come into a building and really bring everyone together as the leader who's kind of the taskmaster leader, and everyone knows he's doing everything possible to make it what it is. And I think that's a difference from Aaron Rodgers, obviously, in how he handles things. But my point was, organizationally, to fire people after 2-3 is really pretty early. Those Bronco teams won their next 11. Now, the Jets lost their next one, so they're not winning their final 11. I do think the Jets, though, I do think that if you look at their schedule second half of the year, the defenses they're playing, I do think they have potential to still get back into it and be a team that might make the playoffs. Now, I'm worried a little bit about Rodgers physically, just holding up over the course of games in the season. He's taken too many hits, but I don't think it's just a complete disaster that the firing made it seem like.
Hey, Mike, thank
appreciate
you for the time,
you, Mike.
Man. This is really great. Appreciate you.
Hey, thank you.
Send love to Jerry.
I will do.
Mike Sando, give him a follow at Sando NFL. That guy's wired in around the league and does some really great work in that pick six column.